You know, when we picture a massive scientific breakthrough, we almost always default to that classic eureka moment,
Oh,
right?
absolutely. The whole Hollywood version of science.
Yeah, exactly. We imagine this lone genius in a white coat, standing in a brightly lit lab, holding up a glowing test tube. It's clean, it's simple, and it makes for a really fantastic movie scene.
Right. We just love that narrative of the isolated visionary changing the world before breakfast.
But when you actually step into the trenches of modern clinical research, that glowing test tube is, well, it's surrounded by a mountain of regulatory red tape, massive data sets, ethical oversight committees, and teams of dozens, sometimes hundreds of people.
Yeah, modern science is definitely not a lone genius. It is this massive tangled web.
And today we are looking at the person who untangles it.
The person who actually makes that eureka moment legally and, logistically possible.
Right. So welcome to the deep dive. Today we have a mission that is highly relevant to you, the listener, especially if you're trying to figure out how to future-proof your own career in this increasingly automated world.
That's a really important topic right now.
It really is. So we are profiling a fascinating, highly specialized professional named Jenny Skita. And just a quick note from our sources, her last name is pronounced Skita.
Right, and we're looking at a career that spans over 15 years in complex clinical and translational research. We've got two main sources today: a formal contributor role clarification document and her highly detailed 2026 curriculum vitae.
And I have to say, even before we get into the dense documents, I spent some time looking through her online portfolio, and it is just completely fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the website itself is gorgeous from a UX perspective.
Right.
And right at the top, she refers to herself as a creative technologist.
That's a great title.
Right. There's even a tab on her site playfully labeled Side Quests, which tracks all her volunteer work and creative projects. It's just so unique. So, okay, let's unpack this because looking at this CV, the sheer breadth of skills is incredible. We are trying to understand what a modern connective tissue professional looks like in the age of complex clinical research and AI integration.
What's fascinating here is that we so rarely get to see the behind-the-scenes architects who make these complex scientific studies actually function.
Yeah, we really don't.
We read the headlines about, a new medical app or an AI breakthrough, but we don't see the operational ecosystem that allowed those discoveries to happen safely. And Jenny Skita represents that ecosystem.
So let's look at her day-to-day. Right now, she is a research manager at Seattle Children's Hospital, overseeing the full operational infrastructure of active NIH-funded research portfolios for principal investigators, Dr. Kim R. Ahrens and Dr. Frederick Schick.
That is a massive job.
It is. And the sources list her responsibilities using some heavy acronyms: IRD submissions, RPPR and RMR reporting, ALCOAC compliance. For those of us not working in hospital administration, what does that actually look like?
Well, it looks like managing the fundamental lifeblood of a scientific study. Take the IRB, for example. That's the Institutional Review Board. Anytime a hospital conducts research involving human subjects, especially vulnerable populations like pediatric patients, an independent board has to rigorously review the ethics and safety of the study.
Right, to make sure no one is getting hurt.
Exactly. And she is the one managing that entire submission and approval life cycle. As for things like RPPRs, those are research performance progress reports.
Which sounds like a lot of paperwork.
It is, but it's crucial. When the federal government gives a hospital millions of dollars in NIH funding, you have to meticulously prove that the study is progressing legally and effectively.
You know, reading through her responsibilities, the best analogy I can come up with is a film producer.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, think about it. Principal investigator, the doctor, is like the director. They have the scientific vision, they get the glory, they get their name on the published paper. But Jenny is the producer.
She secures the funding.
Exactly. She secures the funding, she clears the locations, which in this case means IRB and regulatory compliance, and she manages the diverse crew of clinical coordinators, data scientists, and clinicians to make sure the director's vision actually becomes reality.
That's a really accurate way to look at it.
But I want to push back a little here, just for the sake of argument. Is regulatory compliance and federal reporting really the engine of scientific discovery? I mean, it sounds a bit like, well, just heavy paperwork.
I completely understand why it might look that way from the outside. But science without compliance isn't science, it's a liability.
A liability.
Absolutely. It's a
Yeah.
danger to patients and to the institution. What her CV shows is deep, rigorous knowledge of things like LTOC compliance. That's a framework used by the FDA.
Okay, what does ALCOAC stand for?
It ensures that every single piece of clinical data, is attributable, legible, contemporaneous, original, and accurate.
Wow, that is specific.
It has to be. If even one of those letters fails, like if a data point isn't documented at the exact time it was observed, an entire multi-year clinical trial can be thrown out during an FDA audit. Her infrastructure is what enables technically complex science to happen compliantly.
And there's a specific detail in our sources that perfectly highlights how seriously she takes these boundaries in a physical clinical setting.
Oh, the King County SETI.
Yes, exactly. The clarification document details her time at the recovery centers of King County between 2011 and 2014. She was an operational research supervisor managing a pilot study for buprenorphine treatment,
which is a medication primarily used to treat opioid use disorder.
Right.
So right away, you're dealing with an incredibly high-stakes, highly regulated patient population.
Exactly. And the document is incredibly careful to define the exact scope of her clinical procedures during that study. It clarifies that while she prepared clinical labs and assisted clinical staff, her role was purely supporting.
That's an important distinction.
It really is. She assisted with vein palpation, essentially helping to locate a vein, and she was responsible for processing and handling the laboratory samples after they were collected.
But she didn't actually draw the blood.
No, she did not perform venipuncture herself. And she did not independently conduct blood draws. The actual execution of the clinical procedure strictly remained the responsibility of licensed clinical staff.
And that distinction is vital. It demonstrates a professional who implicitly understands the absolute boundaries of scope of practice in a medical setting.
Because stepping over that line would be bad.
In healthcare, blurring the lines of who is licensed to do what is incredibly dangerous. She isn't blurring those lines, she's aggressively protecting them.
But that brings up a massive logistical challenge. Managing these incredibly strict FDA regulations, DEA audits, and scope of practice boundaries on paper is one thing, but how do you get a massive, diverse hospital staff of overworked nurses, researchers, and doctors to actually follow them day in and day out?
That is the million-dollar question in healthcare. Mm-hmm. I mean, a brilliant compliance protocol means absolutely nothing if the staff ignores it because it's too confusing.
Right.
And that naturally leads us to the next massive pillar of her career, which is her background in education and training. It's one thing to know the rules. It's another entirely to translate that bureaucracy into actual human behavior.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. If you look at her educational background from the University of Washington, she eventually earned a Master of Science in Information Management with a data science specialization.
Which makes total sense for managing clinical trial data.
It does, but her Bachelor of Arts is actually in psychology.
Ah.
Does that psychology background give her an edge here? Because it seems to me like she is essentially using psychology to translate dense FDA guidelines into adult behavior modification.
It absolutely gives her an edge. And I'd say it explains a lot of her success. Think about the friction you encounter when you introduce a new software system or a new compliance checklist to a hospital staff.
People hate new software.
Exactly. They're busy, they're stressed, and they just default to their established habits. Her educational initiatives require immense empathy for the end user. It's about knowing how the human brain acquires and retains information, which is deeply rooted in psychology.
And we see that psychological approach applied directly to technology in 2020. From February to August of that year, she was an EPIC research credentialed trainer.
Right, EPIC.
Yeah, for you listening, EPIC is the massive electronic health record system that essentially serves as the operating system for modern hospitals. It is notoriously complex.
Very complex.
She didn't just teach it. She co-developed the core EPIC research curriculum for the staff. She created specialized e-learnings using software like Adobe Captivate. And she's certified in the EPIC research module proficiency with honors.
Which is critical because if the research nurses can't seamlessly use the EPIC software, the data isn't captured correctly.
And we're back to failing those LCOAC compliance standards we talked about earlier.
Exactly.
And rather than just reading off a list of dates, if you look at her output in 2019 alone, she was essentially running a one-woman university for the hospital staff.
She was really busy that year.
Month after month, she was developing and presenting specialized trainings for research coordinators and nursing teams on everything from ethical consent practicums to FDA clinical trial implementation.
So she's the one standing at the front of the room, turning abstract compliance laws into actionable steps for human beings.
Her ability to facilitate complex human dynamics goes beyond just software and clinical systems, too. Our sources note that in May 2021, She served as a co-facilitator and presenter for an anti-racism workshop called Breaking Ice.
That was for staff and faculty within the Center for Child Health Behavior Development.
Yes, and she was also a subcommittee member for the Research Anti-Racism Committee, representing research staff goals. And just to be clear, we're bringing this up not to make any sort of political point, but it really highlights her broad organizational involvement.
Right. It shows she is clearly willing to step out from behind the spreadsheets to help facilitate difficult, necessary human conversations that shape the culture of the workplace itself.
That seems to be the thread tying all of this together.
It is. Her core competency is taking complex, intimidating, or challenging systems, whether that's an FDA audit, a massive software rollout, or organizational dynamics, and acting as the translator for the humans who actually have to navigate them.
Which makes perfect sense for where her career pivots next. Because if her superpower is translating complex systems for human users, she has now set her sights on the most intimidating system of our current era, artificial intelligence.
Oh yeah. This is where the CV goes from an impressive operational background to something truly cutting edge. She's really evolved into a specialized AI workflow integration expert.
Just looking at the skills section of her CV, it reads like the technical wish list of a Silicon Valley startup, not a hospital research manager.
It's a huge list.
We have programming languages like Python, R, and SQL. Then we get into a massive list of AI tools, Claude Code, custom GPTs, custom gems, make.com automations, Studio LM.
And then layered on top of that, UI and UX design tools like Figma and Procreate.
But I have to admit, I am a bit confused by a contradiction in our sources here.
Okay, let's reframe whatever you were seeing. What's the contradiction?
Well, the contributor clarification document explicitly states, and I quote, her expertise is not in computer vision or generative AI model development.
Yeah.
But at the same time, her CV shows she recently developed a prototype funded by an OpenAI mental health research grant alongside Dr. Ahrens.
Right.
It also shows she co-authored a 2022 paper titled Practical Digital Disguises, which leverages face swaps to protect patient privacy in research. Wait, how can she be funded by OpenAI and co-author tech-heavy face swap papers if she is explicitly not the one building the AI models?
I see what you mean. Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it perfectly illustrates the critical difference between building foundational AI and applying applied AI.
Applying it.
Right. She's not an engineer training neural networks from scratch in a server farm somewhere. But the computer vision scientists who do build those models cannot just walk into a pediatric hospital and start experimenting on patient data.
Oh, right, because of the IRB regulations and HIPAA laws we talked about earlier.
Exactly. Think of that practical digital disguises paper, like a witness protection program for medical data.
That's a cool way to put it.
The AI scientists need to analyze a patient's facial expressions to detect signs of pain or neurological issues. But legally and ethically, they cannot expose the patient's actual face.
So they swap it.
Yes. Jenny's operational workflow helps integrate a digital disguise, a face swap that keeps the vital medical data intact, like a wince of pain, but hides the patient's identity. She provided the critical research coordination and the IRB infrastructure that allow those computer vision scientists to actually test their technology compliantly.
So she is the bridge connecting the clinical world with the AI capabilities.
Absolutely. And when it comes to those tools like Claude, Python, and make.com, she's utilizing existing technologies to build customized automated pipelines for the clinical study teams. She's teaching the hospital how to actually use the tools to make their jobs easier.
And that is a massive value add. I mean, in healthcare right now, nurses and clinical coordinators are drowning in administrative burden.
And she is actively fighting that. In June 2026, she created and presented the first in a series of AI education seminars available to all staff at the Research Institute.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and in May 2026, she presented on AI workflows for research nursing at an annual symposium. That actually provided continuing education credits for Washington State nurses. She's giving them the tools to automate the busy work.
And returning to your earlier point about her website and her title as a creative technologist, she's making these tools visually intuitive. You mentioned Figma and Procreate. She isn't just handing a nurse a clunky piece of code, right? She is designing the interface.
Exactly. The sources note she provided UX user experience and UI user interface designed for iOS and Google Play apps.
Like the Mind app and the Extend app?
Yes. And in December 2024, she co-presented on visualizing complex data streams using R, AI, and a data visualization package called Jigplot.
Oh, I've heard of that.
She is actively designing how the human eye interacts with complex data.
Which brings us to a really compelling question about the modern workforce for you listening. We are analyzing a professional who can handle pediatric sample processing protocols, navigate Washington Board of Pharmacy audits, write Python automation scripts, build custom GPTs, and design mobile app interfaces.
That's a lot.
Is this normal? Are we all expected to become these hybrid Swiss Army knives of science, technology, and bureaucracy? Because looking at her publication and presentation history, it spans 15 years and covers an incredible spectrum.
It really does.
She has a 2025 paper on navigating IRB challenges for transgender youth, and all the way back in 2010 and 2011, she was presenting posters examining the predictors of sexual hookups in college students. She's volunteered as the local chair for an international ETRA ACM conference in 2022, and she currently sits on the Seattle Children's Institutional Review Board. It is a staggering amount of hats for one person to wear.
It is definitely not normal yet. I mean, most industries still heavily rely on specialized silos. You know, you have the compliance department over here, the IT department over there, the clinical staff on the floor, and the design team in another building entirely.
And they never talk to each other.
Or if they do, they rarely speak the same language. Projects fail because the IT team doesn't understand the clinical workflow, or the clinical team doesn't understand the compliance regulations.
But professionals like Jenny are entirely immune to being siloed. She can walk into any room in that hospital, from the executive boardroom to the server room to the patient clinic, and immediately understand the friction points because she speaks all of their languages.
That is the power of the modern polymath. When you have a deep functional understanding of the whole board, you can see solutions that narrow specialists completely miss.
Right.
You can see how a simple Python automation script could solve a massive FDA compliance bottleneck, or how a basic psychological principle could drastically improve how a nurse interacts with an electronic health record.
So what does this all mean? For you, the listener, whether you are prepping for a meeting or just trying to map out your own career trajectory, Jenny Skeeta represents an absolute masterclass in professional adaptability.
She really does.
We've watched her career move seamlessly from managing physical clinical trials to educating massive workforces to diving headfirst into applied AI and UX design.
I think the primary takeaway here is that whatever field you happen to work in, whether it's medicine, tech, finance, or education, there's immense irreplaceable value in becoming the translator.
The translator.
Yeah, being the connective tissue between different departments or emerging technologies is where the most critical and secure work of the next decade is going to happen.
It really makes you rethink what it means to be a technical professional. As artificial intelligence systems become more and more advanced at writing their own code, analyzing massive data sets, and generating models, the purely technical skills might actually become commoditized. The machines are going to be able to do the math and write the scripts.
Which leaves us with a really fascinating prospect for the future of human labor.
It does. It leaves you wondering, as AI handles the heavy lifting of data and code, will the most future-proof, irreplaceable job in science eventually become the research manager?
That's a great question.
Right. The person who understands the complex federal regulations, the user experience design, and the messy, nuanced human psychology required to guide that AI safely into the real world. Because when the scientific eureka moments of tomorrow are being generated by algorithms, we are still going to need someone to ensure the building doesn't collapse around them.
We're still going to need the connective tissue.
Exactly. Something to think about as you navigate your own career. Until next time.